Hello and welcome to Working Title. I'm Ryan Frang with the BitLife Show. On today's episode, we're going to talk to T.C. DeWitt of Firmament Films about directing, writing, and producing The Princess Knight, a puppet film that we're helping shoot here in Madison, Wisconsin. We'll go ahead and start the show.
All right.
Thanks, T.C. DeWitt, for joining us here.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah. So I'm Ryan. This is Jeff,
Yo.
Julia, John. We're all going to be here every week, I guess, as long as this keeps working.
So R and the Triple J's, is that the new name for the show?
That's right.
R and the Triple J's.
That's our singing group.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be Big R and the Triple J's.
We just got these new microphones. They're pretty great. So we feel like radio celebrities, which I feel like is maybe here on the list of things, you know, we want to be. And maybe I'm like myself. I just feel I'm right here. So maybe I'll just revert back to that. So we have T.C. DeWitt, creator, writer, director, sometime puppeteer.
Yeah.
Maybe not nothing else to keep your credits down.
Okay. For
of T.C. DeWitt's The Princess Knight.
That's right.
And we're going to be talking about the creation of this film, where it came from, why it came from, and you as a director.
Came from in here.
So hit us with a whammy. Where did this film? Tell us about this film. What is this film?
That we're
all working on.
You're all working on. For those of you who don't know, we need to talk later. Okay. The Princess Knight is a fantasy comedy musical. It's much in the vein of Disney, classic Broadway, Rodgers and Hammerstein's type adventure plays and musicals, and a lot of traditional fairy tale elements, but it's also littered with tons of references from every story that I've loved growing up. So movies, television, comic books, it's a slew of homage and references.
About how many references would you say
In the original stage version?
If you could just estimate.
Well, it was 101. Originally, there was 101 references in the stage version. When I wrote it, we added like 20 more in the stage show, and now that it's been translated into a film, there's some had to go, some new ones came in, so I'd say like 125. It's a lot of references, but it's a fairy tale. It's the princess, the hero, the villain. Very typical. But when the villain goes to kidnap the princess, he accidentally kidnaps the hero because he's dressed like the princess. It's a whole thing. And so the princess throws on a suit of armor and becomes the titular character, the Princess Knight, and she goes on an adventure to save the day. So
you had said too, the stage play.
Yes.
And we're shooting a movie. So what was the stage play? What about the movie makes it different?
Initially, as a stage show, there was 13 songs total in the whole show, and so one thing that was lost in translation was cutting a ton of songs, because you could sit through a 3-minute song when you're watching on stage, because that's what you're there to see.
Right,
but in a movie, it's like, they're singing again. It's a 3-hour movie.
Yeah. I feel that same way about Frozen.
Sorry,
is this not
a music video?
It's a very long. It's a 2-hour music video with ice people.
So initially, as a stage show, it was.
Let's see. That's not quite 6 minutes in. First Frozen reference.
Let it go, man.
They're
there's
really
gonna be a little.
Over.
That's two. There's a little counter. There's a little counter that'll ding.
My 1-year-old can sing one song.
Do you want?
Let it go.
Oh yeah.
Because he can say go really well.
Yes.
So. Go.
Go.
That's pretty much all I think of Frozen.
You want to know the difference between the stage show, or how did it go from stage to screen?
Why did it go from stage to screen, and what makes the screen, the film, different?
A producer that we're all familiar with who's producing this from Firmament Films, Chris Mayer, had felt like it was time for us to move into features. Now, I've done a lot of short films with him. We've done a lot of commercials, music videos, short films of all types of genre. And the notion of maybe we should think big picture stuff. And one of our ilk said, hey, wouldn't it be easier to film something if we didn't have actors?
Can I ask who that idiot was? I mean, not idiot. Oh, my goodness, it's them.
So the idea was like, okay, we instead of trying to get all these actors in place and clear schedules and whatnot, the idea was to do it with puppets. And so that was, I wouldn't say a mistake, just a lot harder than we anticipated it to be. I think harder than if we had done it with live actors.
My right arm, thanks you.
Yeah, well, you're quite buff.
It's becoming very muscular.
He's like the guy from Lady in the Water now.
This arm is just crap. This one is like, I can
Jeff
lift
is
you
a bu- puppeteer, for those who don't know.
Oh, yeah, sorry, we're busting away.
Yes, this wasn't like
he's one of the main puppeteers that we have.
Yeah, it wasn't like a, talking about his personal life or anything.
No, I'm a puppeteer. What were you guys thinking?
Yeah.
Oh, gross. Guys, grow up. This is like a family show, right?
Wait, what are you talking about?
What were you talking about?
So the story worked on stage, so it was pretty much a given that we knew the story worked. We knew the story could work as it played out. We've seen it executed on stage, so to translate to the screen, we're like, well, we know we got a story that works. We know people are entertained by this story. So then it was a matter of translating it from the stage to the screen, which was a learning process for me as a writer. I've written plays and I've written film scripts before, but to translate, to adapt it from stage to screen, it was hard for me to do at first because I wanted to keep as much as possible from the original. Mm-hmm. And then, I'd have these moments of like, oh wait, there's a film. Yeah. We can do things differently. We can do cutaways. We can do a flashback. We can, and once I really realized the potential of what we could do, yeah, it was like, oh my God. Like, so then there's a lot that stayed between the two. I mean, it's still the exact same story. But there's a lot of new things for the movie. So those people who did come out and see the show when it's been produced in a couple of different places, you're familiar with it, but there's plenty of surprises to come in the film version as well.
And feel free, anybody else, to jump in here when you want.
I've been jumping in the entire I don't need to jump in again.
Talking that way.
That way.
Oh, I was not in his eye line.
Julia, she really brings up the quality of people that we have on this side of the table.
That's a fact.
Get her.
I lower the average.
That is a fact.
I was including you with myself and John.
Oh, okay.
So.
Now, the story itself about Princess Knight being that princess, and I said there's a ton of references in it, but really one of the message in it is about choosing your own path and being okay with being who you are, because it's very typical of people say you have to do this, you have to do this. This is life. You go to school, you go to college, you get married, you have kids, you retire. That's it. Or well, there's little things in between.
that's it.
But that's not for everybody. Everybody should choose their own path, and that's super cliche. But the message in it and all the characters in it are all these conflicted characters who aren't being true to themselves. And I feel I took a much different path than everyone in my family. I'm not a teacher. That's very first and foremost there. But they were always very supportive of me choosing a different path and being taking these creative chances and striking out on my own. And I've learned over time that it's like, it's okay. I've met people who are much cooler when they're themselves, and I've met people who are much more annoying when they're trying to be the standard. And that went into the play as a message I could give to like my nieces and my nephews, and having a main character who's a strong female. I know it's kind of like becoming the standard. It's not standard enough. And Scarlett in the movie, in The Princess Knight, mm-hmm. comes off initially as a princess who just wants to fall in love, but once she realizes she can rise up and she can be the hero and she can take control of her life. And yes, it's still, in the pursuit of happiness, being love to her. There's more to it than that. And all the characters littered throughout have that element in them. And that's what the real message of the movie and the play was as well, is that it's like, be yourself.
Yeah, and it seems like a really great time, too, with Frozen and,
Hunger Games.
When was Mulan?
Yeah. Oh, that was like in the 90s.
Well, I feel like that kind of started the, woman heroine, as opposed to the older Disney movies where the woman always gets saved.
And, yeah. The damsel has become so cliche and so annoying. Right. Trying to take those cliches and turn them a little bit, not in like a Shrek-like fashion. Not that I'm bashing Shrek necessarily, but a lot of their like, ooh, look what we did with the fairy tale. It's like edgy and cool. It's like, you can turn it on the standard without being like, oh, that'll be a dated joke in about 5 years.
Well, what's really good about The Princess Knight is the main character has to, how much can we tell?
Oh, you can tell. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Scarlett.
Princess Scarlett, the titular character.
Princess Scarlett, the titular.
Titular character.
Has nothing to do with her being a woman.
That is, that's literally my favorite word.
Titular Jeff. The role is completely flipped on its head, where our hero comes to see the princess one last time, try to one last ditch effort before she's going to get married.
To win her over, yeah.
But he's dressed up like a girl.
And he gets kidnapped.
And he's the one who gets kidnapped and has to get rescued.
Yeah.
So,
and cartoon fun ensues, or puppety fun, I should say. And that's kind of, there's a lot of homages and elements of what, like I said, that inspired me as a storyteller. So there's very much Bugs Bunny Looney Tune logic. Wig, dress.
Woman.
Oh, yeah.
Woman.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeff gets it.
I get it.
I get it.
Trust me, I get it all too well.
I came in like that yesterday.
I did.
He didn't understand that it didn't work with real people.
Yeah.
It works in film. But
I work in film.
It's very
but
confusing.
I was trying to get that $2 lady night discount. It apparently doesn't work.
It was a great wig.
Oh, what a nice.
It was real hair at once.
Essentially, the message is women, ladies, girls, if you want to be respected, you dress up like a man.
Yes. I hope that's not what people are saying. Well, now, great. How do I defend that?
But it is an interesting point to make about how I think to where Chester is trying to, like, woo Baron out of it. It was a very, Chester takes on more feminine qualities, and I think
absolutely
a really positive way. And I think that's what's interesting about this. Also, the addition of Lily as a female sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a female lead with a strong female sidekick is also different.
Oh, yeah.
I think in that usually, you know, like the Little Mermaid had her male guys.
Yes, yeah.
But and Snow White had her seven dwarves, but here Scarlet has her
sidekick.
Her sidekick is
also
another
female
Lily.
Right.
So
nice.
I think
we
can appreciate that.
There was apparently a tradition of all the men were very tiny. They're all small
all
the men. Sidekicks.
Small men.
All small men.
The sidekicks, you mean?
Very curious.
You know, it's just weird like that.
Just old tradition. How with the old Little Women now?
Little men.
Well, puppets.
Little puppets. Well, we got Vesper back over here, who's another strong female, a very strong female character.
Yes.
And she kind of falls into some of the traditions of she's in love. Like, she's so infatuated. She'll make no excuse. There's nothing's wrong with her, who she loves. She's actually the sidekick to the bad guy, the Baron von Briarthorn. Vesper is in love with him and loves how evil he is. Which, Vesper accepts him for who he is, but when he wants to change, she can't take that, and she tries desperately to keep him as she sees he should be. Analyze that for what it's worth.
Just throw that out there.
Yeah.
Just cans of worms.
This is going to be one of those movies that, like, years later, the teacher's going to be like, so now why did you think that he did this? And they'd be like, I just did it because I thought it was funny.
I'd like to think that's the answer. It's just like, I just thought it'd be funny. But, like, sometimes when I sit back and really look at, like, what I've written, the characters I create, it's like, well, how much of me is in all these characters? And nearly everyone in The Princess Knight is some analog for a part of my life, my whole life, a younger version of me, a younger mentality, a more feminine, emotional me, which I'm don't want to talk about.
In the throes of right now.
I'd pop this collar if I could.
The insecure man. Yeah.
Who's the troll then?
Well, not everyone is.
I like to feel the troll is actually me.
What?
You have become the troll.
Him. Yes.
Yes, as a spinoff to The Princess Knight, and as the...
It's not intended as a segue into that.
No,
but
no,
you
that's
may
fine.
Continue.
Please, the, and help promotion.
Don't give us a strong plug here.
For it, Jeff.
No, you know, he can do it. It's his character.
in an effort to kind of keep the word out about Princess Knight as we're producing it, which has been we've produced now for a year. Like, actual filming has taken place for a year now. And we've gotten halfway through. That's great. But we're so used to instantly gratifying people with our short films and a lot of the other stuff we do that with Princess Knight. It's like, how do we keep content out there so people keep aware of it? And this concept of taking the troll, who's one of the kind of secondary characters in the bad guys world, give him his own video diary. And we and Jeff, who voices the troll.
I voiced the troll in the movie itself, which was prior to us obviously wanting to do the web series.
Yeah,
that's
why. It was just
flavor. Yeah. Can we get
do
a little flavor
troll
of that?
Well, I don't know. The troll's in retirement right now. No, it's in, hello. The
troll, hey, man.
Hey,
troll's
everybody.
Here.
Hey, Jeff let me borrow his headphones. Is that what I sound like? Man, I'm echoing.
We also have the therapist here, too, because you play
the
therapist, right?
Now, the Baron von Briarthorn, now where he has the Vesper next to him, who's always trying to, you know, keep him so evil and whatnot. See, I've been hired as the anger management therapist.
Post-World War II scientist.
It's, it's very German. And Baron, now listen to what I have to say. Now,
That's why he loses his hands.
There's a lot of one of the standards of my writing is the power of three. Mm-hmm. You know, three is a very powerful number. Jokes come in three.
Played a lot of Zelda.
Yeah. Right. So a lot of characters have, there's a lot of triangles in everything I write. It was the triforce.
That gag only good for the video podcast. Audio podcast, people were just being like, you hear me going,
how does your body make those noises?
I raised my hands above my head. That's what I did. Okay. Here, take this with you.
So the therapist is another character that I actually ended up voicing, which that was an interesting translation from script to stage to screen. Because when I initially wrote the therapist, I wrote him as this German Sigmund Freud character. I saw him as mustache, glasses, bald, tweed jacket, suede patches, bow tie. And that's how I wrote it. I wrote it with Z. Like, this is how I've written. He's this way. It wasn't smart. I should have just said in German accents. When we auditioned for the stage show. When we auditioned for the stage show, no one auditioned for the therapist that could do it. And it came down to, I was like, wow. I need to just take that idea away and just accept who could play the role. And Libby was she went for it. She's Vietnamese and she went for the German accent. And I was like, I love her for trying. Yeah. And I cast her in the role and I was like, look, forget the accent, forget how it's written. How do you translate this?
And she came up with almost a Professor Frink-like professor type character who's now Baron. Let us get a control. Like, she did all the lines as they were, but now she turned it into a much nerdier character.
Which she did a great job.
Oh, she did a fantastic
job. I saw the stage show of it. And it was, I mean, when you said, oh, this is actually how the therapist is supposed to be,
yeah.
I was like, but that's not how the therapist was on the stage show.
Right,
like,
and she played as nerd. And yeah, then a high school
So that
did,
was on the play?
In the stage version, yeah.
When you're auditioning.
Yeah, okay. And she did a nerd, like a nerdy, and I was like, this is the therapist now. Nice. So for this version of the show.
Nerdy Vietnamese lady.
It's a niche market. It's
all about role reversals.
Nail it, yeah. And then a high school did it, and a high school performed it, and when I went to see the high school shows, I wasn't involved at all. Like, they got the script, they bought the script for me, and and I went to see it, and they interpreted the therapist as, like, a hippie, man. Like,
oh, no.
3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3. No. What the heck is bothering me? Repeat. And, you know, tie-dyed shirt, headband, John Lennon glasses. I was in stitches because it was just, it never even crossed my mind. There's one line in the script where Vesper's like, oh, that peace-loving hippie. And the therapist's like, oh, that doesn't even make any sense. And they interpreted that as, he's a hippie. Okay. Hilarious.
From
the one line of dialogue, that's how they interpreted the therapist.
Excuse me, Mrs. Taylor, I think we're doing it wrong.
He says he's a peace-loving hippie.
But it was up for interpretation. And one of the things that I brought to when I did the show on the stage was it was the world premiere. It was the first time these characters were being brought to life. And I was very, very open to everyone's ideas. I was like, we are bringing these characters to life for the first time. The word isn't law. Play with this. Find a way to play these characters differently than I thought of them. And another thing I did was there were no company members in the stage show. I was like, everyone who's cast in the show gets a line, and I want you to know what character you are. What are you? Oh, you're a woodsman. Okay, let's get him an axe. Let's get him in flannel. Oh, what are you? Oh, you're a flower girl. Okay, let's get her flower. I let every single person who's going to be on that stage become a character. And in that, like, we had the butcher, baker, and the candlestick maker. It's this trio of kind of cronies to the antagonist, Prince Sandstone. Well, then we had this kid, Mason, who was in the cast. And he's like, can I be a Mason? Mason the Mason? I was like, yeah, it makes perfect sense. And so it's butcher, baker, candlestick maker, and Mason. And then we had this kid, Ty, who, a little bit ADD, I figured out if I gave him enough to do, he was so focused in performing that his attention was locked in. He was like essential to the show because we created a fifth character for that group, a drunk. And got so many good sight gags
out
of him.
You rewarded the kid with ADHD
with
by coming out of his show by being the drunk.
Just act out. Like, hey man, it's cool. And the drunk actually made it into the screen version. The film version has the drunk as a character because Ty brought that character to life.
Ty's inspiration.
Yeah, nice. And his costume is exactly the same. There's a lot of the characters who are designed nearly identically to the original actors who play them on the stage. know, we were lucky enough that some of the original performers, mostly the women, yes,
they look like puppets.
Mostly the women reprised their role. Candace Assler played Vesper for the stage. No one could play that role but her. When I first came up with this idea, a little history about Princess Knight. I initially thought of the idea in college. It was this little seedling of an idea at a playwriting class, and I wrote a little one-act fairy tale that was a librarian reading a fairy tale to a group of kids, and all the people behind him weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing in the story. So, like, the princess who's stuck on the tower figures out how to get down by herself. The kid who shows up to be the hero wants to build a treehouse, and he didn't even know he was supposed to be the hero today. And the villain, Hattrick the Horrible, is a hypochondriac with obsessive-compulsive disorder. So, like, the librarian's reading the story, and there's these three characters behind him who are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And this little kid in the audience is like, they're not doing it! And he's like, fine, kid, fix the story. You're gonna keep acting out. You're in the play now. Yeah. Oh God! So when I came up with that, this element of Princess Knight, a princess who could save herself, and a villain who is going through anger management therapy, like that little seed was planted, and I actually like jotted down the idea on a napkin, and I literally carried that napkin in my sketchbook.
Just like J.K. Rowling.
That's how it all starts, man.
102 references.
So we're going to start the novelization next, right? That's the next step of this?
At one point, I did think, this will never be a play. This will never be anything. Maybe I should try to write this as a book, much in the vein of The Princess Bride, which is a novelization of not really a book.
Yeah.
But I carried that napkin with me for years. And when I moved from Wisconsin to California, I went out there determined to work and like work hard, and I went through like a breakup, and like it was a big transition to move. I needed to kind of reboot, and one of the things was I was like, I don't want to make too many friends who will distract me, so I kind of was like very focused on what I was doing. But I ended up becoming friends with my girlfriend who I moved out there with, Candace, and her friend Radames came over one night. They were in a play together, Pippin. My girlfriend and those two, and
you said that very pleasantly. They were in the play together.
It was just an aside. That's how they met. That's how they knew each other.
Some tiny little show that nobody wanted.
And we just hanging out all night. I was like, oh, these two are kind of cool. And at one point, Radames was like, man, you're funny.
Thank you.
You should write a play or something. And I was like, actually, I have an idea for one. He's like, oh yeah, what is it? And I was like, oh, I'm in. And I like found my sketchbook. I was like, oh, here's the napkin, and like. Okay, so there's a princess in it. I kind of like told them the story, and they were like just completely fascinated by it. Why is this funny?
As a killer?
Like, okay, there's a princess. And then she got a
Well, we had spent the whole night like yelling and laughing that I had lost my voice by the time.
Smoking cigars.
David, where are the drops?
Once upon a time, it was a princess. And I told them the story, and they loved it, and I was like, wow, there really might be something here that I really should. Maybe go back to this napkin that I've had for years and do something with it. And so the point of the story was while we were sitting there talking about it, Radames was like, oh, I'd love to play the wolf and like this. And Candace was like, oh, I could see the witch. She'd be like, oh, I see the witch like this. And she did Vesper's voice. And from that point on, I only ever saw Vesper that way. So it was kind of this amazing wish fulfillment that when we finally did produce on the stage, and now on the screen, Candace played Vesper because she was Vesper in my mind. You know, I didn't even have a name when I had that little napkin, and she planted that new seed that kind of grew into the idea that she ended up getting to play. So,
that's magical.
And can we state that costume and that puppet is a dead ringer for how she looked
absolutely.
In the play?
I carry a little Kindle in. It looks like a faux old like book. And I carry the picture of Candace in costume with me. So whenever I tell people about Princess Knight, I show the puppets, I talk about the play, I'm like, oh, look, and here's a picture of my now girlfriend. The experience of filming it with puppets, doing a feature in itself, going from like the shorts we film in this, it's like a huge leap forward. I'm a firm believer in like one step at a time. You don't need to jump ahead. And though we did think we were ready for a feature, actually tackling it and committing to it and executing it as well as we all have, it's way bigger and harder than I thought it was going to be. And I think, but we've learned a ton. regardless of being puppets, just about making movies.
Yeah.
Everything we've learned doing like 48-hour films and the shorter things we've done, and I mean, you guys produce a ton of stuff, so you're already a little more experienced than I am in production angle stuff for sure. But
yes, we are. Thank you so much.
I love your guys' stuff.
I was gonna say,
where can they find that footage, guys?
YouTube.com/user/trollblog. Wait, did I just re-troll the troll?
You did.
Or untroll the troll?
That's not funny. Troll's still here. Hi, everybody.
You mentioned the annoyance of inside jokes, and Princess Knight has a fair share of its inside jokes. One of the inside jokes that it's in the script. I've actually mentioned it more than one time in something now is the soy sauce joke.
Yes.
Prince Sandstone in the movie, who plays like kind of the Prince Charming. He should have been the hero, and he's more like the antagonist because he's trying to rescue the princess before anyone else does. Tells of all the deeds and feats that I've fought dinosaurs, minotaurs, centaurs, and I once drank an entire bottle of soy sauce without puking. No, you didn't. And I was like, oh, yeah. That's based on actual events. I drank half a bottle of soy sauce, and I did puke.
Liar.
But I made $40.
Loosely based on a real event.
There you go. There
I made $40 to get the taxi cab to the hospital to have his stomach pumped.
You know, so you know, you talked about the fact that, like, filming with puppets, you know, there was this idea, oh, it'll be easy, and then we like ran into all these jokes about how difficult it actually was.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, though, is that with like the fact that biting off, you know, a feature film and all the things that come with it, like trying to get people's schedules and trying to get actors to like coordinate on these days, and you have several shooting days, mm-hmm. like we do all these quick little short videos and we ask people to commit to 2 days. And they do it.
And they're there.
And then it's done.
Yeah.
Trying to get people to commit, like, for a year, 2 years, you know.
With no, like, instant gratification.
Yeah.
Like,
so
is it done yet?
Money.
You know, I've thought of that several times. And although there are a lot of complications that came up with the puppets, it really does seem like one of the best ways to get your actors to show up, like, your actors.
They're in costume.
Because they're there.
Yeah. You know, they don't have haircuts.
You know, because how many shoots have we done where it's two people, but not the same two people from last weekend or the previous weekend or the previous weekend. We needed two people, and they just happen to play the same Chester and Scarlett.
Oh, we did this like an animated film. I previously, a year before this even became an idea of like, let's do puppets. I had done voice work for a puppet movie called Misfit Heights. A couple of my friends from college had filmed it, produced it. It's a feature-length zombie puppet musical. And
we need one more genre.
Yeah.
Comedy.
Western. So they'd filmed this, and the way they had done it is they had filmed the entire thing and then hired voice actors. So the voice actors had to sync to the puppeteers. And that was very, very difficult because sometimes the Muppets or the mouths were just moving, blah, 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 blah. And it was like, oh, how am I going to get this line in that mouth? It's like really difficult. Mm-hmm. And so one of the lessons learned from those guys, who were definitely a huge inspiration for why we even did Princess Knight, because of Jim Brzelik and Dan Griskoviak, two amazing guys, done some great stuff. And, you know, to see that they were able to accomplish it and kind of like they carried the torch and passed us, like, all right, now we're going to try puppets. What worked for them, we were able to utilize, but what didn't work for them was, like, for the voice actor, we did it like an animated film. We recorded all the audio before we ever rolled a single frame of film or video. And the way, what benefits that and what John was saying is that now we have the timing never changes. Mm-hmm. The scene is always going to be delivered in this fashion, and as long as we have someone to work the puppet, it doesn't have to be Candace here. Candace isn't ever, she's been here once to film.
Like maybe twice, maybe, yeah.
So we don't need Candace to show up on set. We just need Vesper and someone who can puppeteer her and knows the dialogue reasonably well. But that's Jeff being one of the voice actors, we give you the track early. Julia well has done some puppeteering. And Ryan and John, I think, have you had a chance?
I have not touched a puppet.
Oh. No.
I have.
Well, you're busy filming
like
the thing.
We would like to keep it that way, really.
Yeah, but we send them the audio, and then they're able to listen to it over and over again with the script in hand. So then when it comes time to get to the set, it's just like, well, I've heard this a few times. I can, and then you can work on the nuances of movement. Right. And yes, it's a huge benefit to work with puppets in that fashion, for sure.
This is just came to mind. So because we have these puppets and because those are the characters and we're talking about the interchangeability
yeah.
of puppeteers, how is that directing? Like, when you're thinking about who's there, are you focusing on the
like puppet? No, listen.
Is that a pain in the ass?
Vesper doesn't move that way. Yeah. Vesper moves this way. But why aren't you moving the same way Vesper should move?
But do you find yourself connected with the characters at all, or are you really removed from that because you're thinking a lot about the puppeteer? Or
I try as best I can to focus strictly on the puppet. You know, obviously I want to make sure our puppeteers are comfortable. I'm not out there. Like, I'll tell you what. I'll go out there and like work a puppet if I think a nuance isn't getting right. I'll be out there for like 20 minutes. I'm like, oh, my arm hurts. Jeff and Julia and Aaron and Jessica, they're out there for 7 hours. Yeah. No complaints. Well, maybe a little bit of like, ooh, my shoulders hurt. Yeah. But, so I would never complain. But yeah, it's there are some puppeteers who are just, who just bring the characters. Like Jeff is hands down our best puppeteer. Yes.
Well, thank you.
You
keep talking about me a little bit. Can we just keep talking about how awesome I am?
Hands down. Oh, hands. Unintentional. I wish I could say that was it.
But if the hands down, how is the puppet going to move?
Hands down, exactly. Heads up.
Oh. Seven up.
And occasionally a puppet will go on someone who's just not bringing life the correct way. Like the giant is this cutesy little kind of like, she thinks she's 100 feet tall. So even though she's the tiniest character, the giant's right back there. Even though she's this tiny little character, she should be moving like she thinks she's 100 feet tall. And you stick it on someone who's not quite getting that concept, they just kind of sit there and make these small movements. And it's like, hey, the giant's got to just think big. You're just stomping around. It's like, okay. It's like, and so it's directing the puppet, but telling the puppeteer how to move the puppet. So it's like, I know I have to be a little more specific in what I'm looking for in the performance from the puppeteer. More so than I would be with like a live actor. As a live actor, you want to explore and you want them to kind of make it their own, with kind of being the avatar for the voice actors, and the puppet being needs to be consistent. It's interesting to direct them sometimes. Yeah.
And as a scene too, as you know, you've directed here and in LA with friends and worked on set and been on TV, like Better Off Ted. Which was really awesome. How many years ago was that?
It's 5 years ago. So
TC is the cat.
Now we'll play the clip.
I remember watching it on Netflix. I was like, this is a great show. And, you know, got into a couple episodes and was paying attention, you know, after the actors walked by. And I'm like, holy crap, there's TC. Like, got to get on the social Facebook. Got to see what's going on.
Like, every now and then, I will get a text message from someone random like, oh my God, I just saw you on, are you on Better Off 10? I'm like, yeah, it was 5 years ago. So I feel like I can't like brag about it anymore because it's like, I think I've passed the point of bragging. I was like, really?
Right. It gets reset.
What have you done in five, since those five yeah, years?
5 minutes. I've talked about short attention span.
I've talked about being on Better Off 10.
Yeah, it's been, you know, I've been really riding.
We talked about the good old years.
Those royalties.
Convention scene.
Yeah. I go to Comic-Con every day, every year as my character from Better Off 10.
Cat guy.
Anyway, you were saying I've directed here, I've directed out there.
Yeah, so I mean, you've worked with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. This is your first time in this this way working with puppets. What do you find different? What's more challenging than working with people when thinking of a scene, when thinking of blocking, when directing a scene and troubleshooting that? Like our first few shoots of eight carts or five carts on the ground.
Or the set being on the floor.
Well,
first day I laid on the carpet. Right here, pretty much right where we're recording this right now.
Suck it in. Suck it in.
Make yourself lower, Jeff.
I weigh 300 pounds.
I can't.
So September of last year, before we actually executed principal photography, we did a test weekend where we filmed a scene. And we walked away from that scene like, let's put it together. Like, John edited the scene together, and we kind of just looked at it and like, okay, what went wrong? What went right? Okay, we got what went right, but now what went wrong? What can we do to make this better and easier? And lessons were learned almost immediately, and every time we film, we walk away with a new trick. Like I was saying,
Don't worry, I'm just gonna take pictures of you.
Okay. With directing puppets, like I was telling John, it's like, how do we create a consistency?
Is it okay if I take a picture of Ryan taking a picture of me?
picture. Yeah, you take a picture.
You're working really hard to ignore the shenanigans.
And I'll think about Julia taking a picture of John.
I will. It looks like everyone is taking a picture of him.
That's really weird.
Wait, does it all have to happen at once?
I'm going to take a picture of
him. But a simple movement of like, we need this character to exit. It's like, okay, just go from here to the door. Damn, we can't show the ground, and the actor with the puppet can't get around the door. Oh, boy. So it's like every now and then we'll hit a stride and be like, oh, this coverage is working, and this angle is working, and this puppeteer's come to life. And then we'll hit the challenge of the day. Every time we film, unexpectedly, there will be some key moment that becomes the challenge of the day. And like we go into every scene, like, what's the money? Like, what's going to be like the money shot? What's going to be like the really cool moment in this scene? And then we want to execute that and get it. It's good. But then we always hit that one challenge. It's like, how does Vesper get out the door with the trunk? This is good. All right, everyone slow down. Have a seat. Right. We need 15. Right. Julia, call break. Ryan, how are we going to do this?
Well, and because we don't have trailers, people get a little anxious.
Get a little antsy.
You realize that. Because they're 10 feet away, like, what's taking so long?
Right. Talent.
10 feet away, I'm laying on the floor still, because I'm like, didn't realize you guys said cut. My arm is still in the air.
Oh, Jeff, you can put your arm down.
The other seven people, they're already laying on the couches.
Where did everybody
they're
else go?
They're just going to take a nap while they try to figure out how to move the trunk.
That's right.
There's no more couch space left. I'm just going to lay here. It's comfortable.
Jeff's going for it.
How's the giant?
It's a little more restrained with the puppets. There's a little less freedom in improvisation. Like you certainly can't improv away from the lines because the dialogue is locked. So finding those really neat moments within the nonverbal communication, or how do we get this character from here to there, is where a lot of the unique moments come from. Like, oh, I never would have thought of that had it been a person. Because we had to figure out a way to do this, and we have a puppet, like, blasting the therapist up into the window, puppeteering him through the window so he looks like he's sticking through the wall, and then letting him go so he hits the ground, cut, put him back on, and pop him back up. Suddenly it becomes this classic Hollywood cowboy role where it's like, blam, boom, now Barons, let me tell you what's what I'm saying when you put it all together. So it is a bit more complicated because the freedom is kind of, there's a little less of it. But when we can find ways to do unique things exclusive for puppets and exclusive to our misunderstanding of how puppets work, we found some really gems doing it.
Yeah, what's your favorite challenge that we've overcome with puppets?
Oh my god. I really liked when we floated the chest past the Baron. Like that was a neat effect shot.
It was
where
like
we
week
like
three
what about,
or something.
Yeah, add in the two.
Oh, yes.
Two girls in the trunk.
Two girls, one trunk?
Two girls, one trunk.
One puppet.
Don't Google that.
So Google
that.
We had this moment where Chester's in the trunk. He's been kidnapped by the Baron. Everyone's arguing outside the trunk, like, you're an idiot. You're a moron. I don't like you. And then Chester just pops out of the trunk and goes, and I'm a man!
I'm a woman.
And goes, so what we did is, like, in a single shot, we got we got Vesper, the therapist, Baron, the trunk. The trunk pops open, and Chester. So we had to have two puppeteers kind of like straddling each other in the trunk to get Chester out and put his arms wide, right. And then cower back in. So we
Julia,
had.
Julia, you were not. Were you not one of those puppeteers?
I was one of those. I was laying on top of Aaron. Aaron, our smallest.
Who will not be named.
One,
wait.
Two,
what?
Three.
Too late. We'll have to
four,
bleep
five.
Our name.
We can't talk about people who are in England.
Because who? Oh, that's right. Because they're in another country, continent.
Yeah. They don't exist anymore. Yeah.
They don't exist.
The camera
until it pans over. There it is. Yeah.
Yeah. England. Aaron.
Dramatic
wait, no,
shot.
That's, no, that, those sounds don't are stop. Bad. Yeah, Aaron.
Anyway.
America.
We should, we should specify real quick the way that was shot was that, yeah, Julia and Aaron were both in the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And then controlling
Chris was controlling the trunk.
Chris was controlling the opening of the trunk. And then
with
we
a
had,
lever from with, behind, right? Mm-hmm.
Right. And then was that not, did we not also do that as the one take where Vesper pushes the trunk in? Was that also
not part
of that?
No, it wasn't part. That was two
oh,
different
Oh, my
ones.
Goodness. Yeah. We did. There was so many of those.
Probably
I
at the beginning it was.
And also
it
with
this
puppeteering blind
oh,
in
yeah.
the blind because we couldn't see anything.
Because
so.
You guys were laying in the trunk.
Right.
And that's right. Aaron was doing the mouth and then you were, or one of the other way around, was
the
doing the hands.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
how many yoga moves have you had to do throughout
do
the movie?
Many, many you're... yoga moves. It's a good thing I know how to curl up in a small ball.
Know how to yoga.
One of the more recent.
It's called.
One
I
more
used
recent.
To have a photo of everybody in the trunk and I cannot seem to find it.
It's on Facebook somewhere.
Is it? Okay, good. I'll find it.
No, it's right here.
See, look at that funny photo, right?
One of my the most recent thing we did was we shot Sandstone for the first time. We had shot a cutaway of him like charging at the camera with his sword. Now Sandstone's our biggest puppet and our heaviest puppet because Kathy Smith, I totally just blanked on her name, who helped build our puppets based on my sketches, is a costume maker. Like she designs costumes for the Milwaukee theaters. So she built all these puppets wearing costumes that you could probably take them off and fit them on a very small person. So Sandstone is wearing armor. He's wearing armor, and he's a heavy puppet. We got him out in the woods. First time we were able to shoot a puppet moving, walking into a shot from almost the shins up because he's wearing a cape. Jessica was wearing all black. So she was behind him at the cape down. She put a sheer cloth in front of her. And we were able to see him come through the forest as almost a full living person. It was very exciting. And we, you know, I'm like, Jessica, okay, she said this 20-pound puppet on her. I'm like, make him more like a ninja. Like, he keeps hopping around, and he's, like, swinging a sword. And she's like, okay.
Well, and explain what's the problem is with Sandstone is he's our heaviest puppet, but all his hand and head openings are the smallest.
He has real hands.
Real hands, so women have to puppeteer him.
Yep, that's right.
He would want it that way.
He would want it that way. He's a bit of a ladies' man.
Indeed. I was trying to find the photo. I got to stop looking for the photo. Sorry, I was just...
It's right there.
Well, I know, but I want to see it now, not backwards.
We are seeing it right now. Don't you see it? Yes.
We were at like 48 minutes, like 10 minutes ago.
That's true. We've been...
Per max.
Well, so audio recording is telling me 45 and a half.
Should we ask TC some directing questions specifically?
Yeah, sure. We kind of got a little bit into some of those specific things.
We did.
So what inspires you?
What inspires me?
What directors are filmed?
In 6 words or less.
Give us 6 seconds.
I'm lying.
That was one. That was three. I'm done.
Next question.
We can do a counter, make sure that was correct.
I will.
We might have one or two more words.
Well... What inspires me is, like, everything. I know that sounds stupid and generic for me to answer that, but it's, like, really hard-pressed for me. Like,
John inspires TC every day.
Movies, television, comic books, stories. Like, I just like stories, and I love telling stories. And so hearing people tell me just even about, like, that's, like I said, when I used to do extra work, my favorite thing was to tell me your best experience, because everyone's got a great story to tell. Even people who, I'm not an actor, I'm not a good storyteller. It's like they've had at least one experience in their life that is unique to only them, and it might be a movie worthy, and they don't even realize it because the mundane and the everyday and truth stranger than fiction, all that. I just love stories. So whether it's music or a video game or just sitting and eavesdropping on a conversation at the next coffee table over.
You know, classy things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, binoculars looking at the neighbor like, oh man, I got that sound like, yeah, argue.
TC will be releasing his first audiobook, The Stalker Files, next year.
Love it. The
read by Ryan Prang, narration.
I love it. So, you know, when I look in terms of like film and television, I have a very, over the years I've developed a very like distinct taste. It's a wide variety that I like, but I know what I like and I know what I don't like.
So let's make it concrete. This is the unanswerable question.
What's the
favorite movie?
Favorite movie.
Ever.
I can only pick one.
Only one.
One.
It's a toss-up. I gotta pick one. I always have one. My default answer is Back to the Future, the first Back to the Future. Or Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but you're only making me pick one. So.
Right. He's still trying.
But I snuck it in there.
And sometimes The Matrix, which would not be up there.
No, it would not be up there. See, Back to the Future is like, and it's the everyman story. It's a hero's quest. It's got this element of before I was a writer, before I was a artist, before I was anything, I wanted to be an inventor. Like when I was in fourth grade, we had to do an assignment. Like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I'm like, I want to be an inventor, like Doc Brown. I'm going to do this. Actually, let's see. I'm going to make things like this. I'll just draw it for you. And I'm going to do things like this. I'm just going to write it down. Hold on a minute. So then I'd be like, boom, that's what I'm going to be when I grow up. Oh, you want to be a novelist? That's good. Thank you. So like, Back to the Future is just so much of what I love about cinema. It is that movie represents the experience of escapism and adventure and fun and funny and fear. It's like there's so much about that movie. And you told me to pick my favorite, so I'm picking that one as my favorite. Because
I also do feel like it follows along the lines of like maturity, because Marty is still very much so a normal kind of not immature, but
yeah, he's 17.
He's 17 teenager in the beginning, but at the end of part three, which is really what, a week and a half later,
yeah,
he's a full blown grown adult man at that point, because he survived being killed and run over and shot and.
Yeah, it's
in the Old West.
Oh, is that what it takes to make a man?
Yes, just send me back to 1885, and then I'll become back a man in a week. You guys will hardly know I'm here, and I'll look like Clint Eastwood.
There's one time I choked on a grape, and then I was like,
oh, man.
That was close.
Danger.
And I feel like that movie is untouchable in that you couldn't remake that exactly. It's a product of its time. It's a product of the special effects of its day.
Want to bet?
You know what? Someone, it wasn't you. It was probably our buddy Bill Corey, who is the voice of the Baron, actually got me to concede that you could, in fact, remake Back to the Future. Ooh. And that's a conversation for another podcast.
Yeah, that needs
because
to be
I have been
about.
Adamantly like, this cannot be done. Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale themselves are like, it'll never happen. And Ferris Bueller's Day Off is another example of one of my all-time favorite movies. I'm picking two. When I was probably 10, my oldest...
He's the guest. He can do it.
Yeah, all right, cool.
He's our guest.
My older sister, she's 9 years older than me, sat me down in front of Ferris Bueller when I was little and said, "You got to be this cool. Watch this movie. You got to be this cool."
And you started lying to your parents.
But Ferris Bueller's Day Off is I can perform that movie like line for line. Like I can't help but sit and watch it and just speak every line as it's coming, and I still laugh and it's still funny. And that movie is again another example. It's untouchable. You can't remake that movie. And I have had this conversation
with
Jeff.
Because of the lovable Puck.
Because of the lovable Puck.
Yep, right. Yep.
You can't make a character like that now without him coming off like an asshole.
So describe this lovable Puck to us. What is the characteristics of it?
Think like Jim Halpert from The Office. Mm-hmm. He plays a lot of pranks. He's not innately cruel to Dwight, but he's always picking on him. And it's always in good fun. Ferris Bueller doesn't hurt anybody in the movie. You know, Rooney, who's the villain, who's like coming after him, for what? Like, why? Because he gets away with it. I think Rooney was was like Jeannie when he was younger, that he never got away with anything. He was followed the rules, and it didn't pay off for him. And he sees Ferris, who represents the cool kids who got to do what they want and get away with it. So that's why he hates him. It's this like he's carried that with him his whole life. And he's like, I hate that kid. I've always hated that kid. Yeah. But Ferris never hurts anybody, and he's the hero, and he wants everyone. He wants his best friend to just live it up and have the best time of his life, and he's genuinely caring, and he can bring an entire city block of people together to sing the Beatles. Like,
that's right.
It's just, he's a good person, even though he's fooling around and he's skipping school and he's getting away with things. It's never cruel.
So are you going to do that next?
Ferris Bueller 2?
The Lovable Puck.
The Lovable Puck.
Bring it back. It can't be done.
Can the movie be called Lovable Puck?
And why it can't be done.
And why it can't be done.
By T.C. DeWitt.
It's like the whole Dr. Strangelove, how I started, you know, that whole, like, long title.
That's great.
Max out the longest title in history. Just do that.
It'll be notable. So my joke there, by T.C. DeWitt, T.C. DeWitt's Princess Knight. Why is it T.C. DeWitt's Princess Knight? You're a very nice person, not egotistical at all.
It's not a branding issue. It's a copyright issue. Because the Princess Knight is actually, first, a novelization, which is the sequel to Inkheart. If you remember the movie Inkheart that came out.
Is it?
The sequel
is... The Princess Knight?
The Princess Knight.
Oh.
Yeah. Luckily, that first movie failed.
I have read that child's book. Yeah.
We have learned things today.
There's also an anime called The Princess Knight.
Sure.
So when I went to copyright it, it was like, there's a title already of a film. You sure you want it to be this? There could be legal issues. And I was like, how about...
So anyone out there...
T.C. DeWitt's The Princess
listening,
Knight.
Listening, maybe you have a friend who has a friend who has a friend who could maybe help us on this and get us the copyright.
Yeah, so we don't...
That'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, when we're...
It's redundant.
I don't call it TCD, it's the Princess Knight. I don't
You just call it my Princess Knight.
That's our Princess Knight. See...
We are Groot.
You just sit in your house and you're just like,
sit in your tower.
T.C. DeWitt's the Princess Knight.
Got to work on my signature here.
T.C. DeWitt's email.
Basically what that's telling me is that all copyright infringement can be just completely bypassed by adding your name to before it.
So I think it works with music.
John,
it's all about the bass, about the Ryan bass. No treble. I always thought it was treble, which made no sense until Julia said treble. Mm. Treble.
Treble.
Yeah. You know, like music terms?
Sounds like treble.
It's probably. All
right. I want to just let you go with that one. See how long it takes.
Next directing question.
Next directing question.
Julia.
Sure. What? Who is your favorite director and
pick
why?
One.
Pick one.
I'll fight you.
Oh.
Pick two.
Like, I wrote three,
like
actually.
50s.
All right, oh, when I get this, see, I'm going to
get a soda. Let's see if we can guess. So Spielberg, that's a guess.
Yep. Spielberg is he defined Hollywood for decades. He defined the blockbuster. Sure, yes, there's George Lucas.
He created the moving camera.
I mean, he changed everything. And we're cut from the same cloth of him that he is in terms of this isn't working, but we got to get this done. Mm-hmm. That damn shark broke all the time.
Yeah.
So let's just not show the shark. How awesome is that? That you only see Jaws when it really matters. And that's like now when it's like we're doing this with Princess Knight. It's like this isn't working. Then we got to figure out a way to make it work. Mm-hmm. And that kind of like shooting from the hip, problem solving, Steven Spielberg for that, for the blockbuster, for traditions that he upholds in his storytelling, have a very distinct style. I mean, people pay homage to Spielberg now. He defined a generation of filmmaking. Super 8 is
which
a love
is
letter.
Which is weird. You know, he's still around and will be around for a while that, you know, we try to emulate him now.
Yeah. He's still
creating.
He's maybe not making the amazing, like, classic standard films now that he used to, but he still comes out with, like, Lincoln. He's a good representation of independent filmmaking. No one wanted Lincoln. He almost had to sell it to Showtime as a miniseries.
Oh, really?
Because nobody wanted it.
Oh, I didn't know
and
that.
He had to go through independent means to get Lincoln put in the theaters.
Shouldn't he just have to knock on the door and be
like, he's like, I don't
Spielberg.
Know.
Spielberg
here,
is here.
Here, hold my Oscar.
Why is Spielberg a German Nazi?
Spielberg.
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 So, yes, Spielberg. There's one. Yeah.
Is Joss Whedon number two?
I would not. I do
has
in,
the man
love
who fights
some
from the bottom.
I do like Joss Whedon, but I would not say he's one of my favorites. Or my favorite.
Jeff?
Fincher.
That's what I was wondering. Fincher.
I had to steal it. That was my second idea.
That wasn't who I was going to say.
I've only recently developed an appreciation for David Fincher.
What about Tyler Perry? Is anyone is he on the table? Or
New groove?
Tyler Perry's about a 10 spot because...
He must have issues with that copyright thing because I notice he says
everything
Tyler
Perry.
Well, what he does is it's actually... He doesn't promote it this way, but it's Tyler Perry, Tyler Perry's. Medea's.
Oh,
now he's a double brand.
Wait, so is he avoiding his own copyright issues?
Yeah,
is that what
or
it
his
is?
Brother? Like there's eight of them. I think
Tyler Perry is one of the most genius filmmakers of today.
I was thinking of the Wayans.
I was just saying
way different.
I was just saying Spielberg represents independent filmmaking. Tyler Perry has built an empire out of his hometown with his church friends.
Yeah,
yeah. He films out of Atlanta. He makes things locally. He employs locally, and he finances everything out of pocket. Like he's a testament to hard work and branding, of course.
Yes, amazing branding.
Being able to do whatever the heck you want doesn't matter.
He's a very powerful man. But no, Edgar Wright. I've recently developed a love for David Fincher just with Gone Girl and looking back at his work. But Edgar Wright, we just shot a short film this past weekend, and I didn't realize just how much I love Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, Scott Pilgrim, and then our Chris Schultz, who works with us on The Princess Knight, showed me a list. Edgar Wright just listed the 10 movies that he was inspired by. Ferris Bueller's Day Off was on there, so I was like, hey, all right. So his style is very cartoonish and slapstick, and I grew up watching Three Stooges and Looney Tunes and Dick Van Dyke Show, one of my all-time favorite shows.
Love that show.
Well, we were just watching that storytelling by Edgar Wright, you know, how to tell a story.
Telling comedy the right way.
Yeah, the right way, and it's fascinating. It's like, here's one way to tell, you know, you're going from one city to the next. Drive, plane, arrive.
Yeah.
And here's the Edgar Wright way to do it.
Yes.
It's like you're sitting in the back seat. You see that. And cut to something annoying. Cut to something else annoying. Cut to, you know.
Yeah.
And then finally you arrive. And you get your beer.
I would definitely recommend that to people listening or watching. Making comedies, or filming comedies the right way, Edgar Wright's last name way. Great video. It's probably like 8-9 minutes long.
Yeah,
it's right up here.
Yeah.
Can we do that?
Floating above our
head. I don't know. Can we play it?
Do we have technology?
And then finally, Peter Jackson. Another.
Oh, explain this.
Now, Peter Jackson is another example of filming like an independent filmmaker. Well, First of all, there's a nice little parallel
like the
here
Hobbit.
Because Peter Jackson made Meet the Feebles, a puppet feature film.
Oh, really?
Did you know this?
Know,
yeah,
huh?
One of Peter
Jackson's.
Is that
on Netflix? Can we watch that?
I don't know if Meet the Feebles is on. It's a rated R Muppet show.
Oh, yeah. Very violent,
yeah.
If I recall.
And it's
right?
Very like the puppets are crummy. Like it is horror slasher. It's R-rated comedy. It's very. He made like Bad Taste, and he made
that's
movies
what I was
like.
Thinking of. Never yeah. mind.
Huh. He's made movies out of his backyard with whatever he could get his hands on, and now he wins Oscars for Lord of the Rings, and he makes The Hobbit and King Kong, and what is going on over there?
And sorry, for future reference, everybody, it is entirely on YouTube.
Oh, good. There you go.
Meet
the Feebles.
Hour and 36 yeah,
Meet the Feebles on YouTube.
Is on YouTube.
And that's where he started. And now Peter Jackson is a director who brings team together of friends and family and creates a family. And that's collaboration is the best part of filmmaking. Telling stories is great, but when you can find the right group of people to tell those stories with, you just want to keep doing it. And Peter Jackson made Fellowship of the Ring and Two Towers, and I mean, he lived with those hundreds of people for years.
9 years or something.
And as soon as The Hobbit came up, they were back there without question. Like, right. Yeah, how do I get back working with Peter Jackson? We will follow this man anywhere. And he is just an example of what I would love to someday achieve in filmmaking. Not the Oscars, not the $200 million movies, but to create productions that are so collaborative and so family that everyone wants to keep doing it. And I'm always trying to think of reasons to to bring my friends and family and get them involved in what I do. You guys are all family to me in many ways.
I'm busy for the next 5 years, so...
Well, look me up when you're done. I will have a place for you right ready.
Sweet.
Under the... See. Haunches of a puppet.
Popping the peas.
Well, I couldn't help it. If you want to see how Peter Jackson makes movies, watch the behind the scenes for the making of The Fellowship of the Ring, Two Towers, and Return of the King.
Really, behind the scenes.
If you want to see him super candid, buy the Blu-ray when it comes out, and you get access to like a live stream of them at Weta or Weta or whatever.
Making the Hobbit.
Making the Hobbit. And he'll take you around, and that's what he did with the first one, and I believe they're doing it for each of the subsequent films.
I know people who admire Peter Jackson for what he's accomplished, but they look at like the blockbusters, and they look at the success in terms of dollars, and
the things that are right in front of you.
I don't feel like enough people appreciate what Peter Jackson has done. What I was just saying in that collaboration, and how much he just is a little kid in love with making movies, and just happens to have hundreds of million dollars of toys to execute those things.
Yeah, he's been enabled.
Yeah, his first movie that made him want to be a filmmaker was King Kong. He saw that on TV on his little 8-inch black and white, and that was the movie that made him want to be a filmmaker, and then he got to make King Kong. Like, you know, that's a wish fulfillment right there.
So if you could make a film that you've seen,
like,
would it be Back to the Future?
The 3.5-hour epic.
I would remake it, right? But I would just re-release it. Like, here's a new movie.
T.C. DeWitt's
The Back to the Future.
T.C. DeWitt.
Somebody sing that at the same time? Or was that,
that was me.
Back to the Future.
Yeah, we got to work on our tuning.
I was going to say T.C. DeWitt's Tyler Perry's Back to the Future.
So the music has already played a song. We can end whenever we want.